I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Our Master Cheesemaker program is one of the only two in the world. So it's no wonder every master in America has called Wisconsin home. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Well, hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, October 6, 2021. And guess what? We are back at Heritage Radio Network studio in the backyard of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is our 303rd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a wonderful chef from Hawaii, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to strive to be a fan favorite. Yes, someone who is liked and likable, admired for their personality, values, and overall attitude. Simply put, a good soul. People can see through BS and what's real or not, and will ultimately gravitate towards the genuine. So let's remember to be our kindest and most authentic selves, as life is not about whether you win or lose the game, it's about how we play it. That's my tip today. Now I'm really excited to have my guest joining me all the way from Hawaii, brought him out to Brooklyn. It is Sheldon Simeon. He is the chef and owner of Tin Roof, a new generation mom and pop restaurant in Maui, Hawaii. Sheldon, who was born on the Big Island of Hawaii, acquired his love for cooking from his family. He attended the Maui Culinary Academy, worked in various restaurants on Maui before competing on seasons 10 and then season 14 of Bravo's hit competition cooking show Top Chef, and he won fan favorite both times. In 2016, he opened his first restaurant, Tin Roof, and then in 2018, he opened Lineage, which was named a James Beard Award finalist for Best New Restaurant in 2019. He left Lineage in 2020 to focus on his first cookbook, Cook Real Hawaii, which came out in spring 2021, earlier this year. Without further ado, hi, Sheldon. Welcome to the show.
Hi. So awesome to be here in Brooklyn, let me tell you. It's a canoe ride away from home.
Yes, I should say aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Yeah, welcome to Bushwick.
That's it. We're trying to bring that aloha vibe to the city, man. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I had to look back at my photo album from Hawaii because I'd been there once and I can never remember how long ago. I think everything was 5 years ago. But I was there in 2014.
Amazing.
My excuse was to go to the Hawaii Wine and Food Festival.
Okay.
Which I went to, which was great. And I also went to Maui.
Perfect.
So I have a little familiarity with where your restaurant is now. But I've never been to the Big Island.
Yep.
So talk a little bit. Take us back to your childhood and growing up in Hawaii and what it was like.
Yeah. You know, like going back to like the islands that you visit, you know, that's what's amazing about Hawaii. It is still paradise and always will be paradise, but each island is very unique to its own. And I grew up in this small little town on the east side called Hilo. It's actually like the rainiest town in the USA. So if you think of that vibe, it's like this sleepy town that's oriented in Ohana and community. And just a simple upbringing with a family that loves food and inevitably became a chef.
Did you think you wanted to be a chef growing up, or when did you decide that it would become your career versus just cooking with the fam?
Yeah, you know, at least through high school, cooking has always been a part of me. You know, there's like photos of me just cooking with my grandparents and stuff. But through high school, I thought I was going to be I wanted to be an architect. I love buildings, I love design, and I love, project work like that. But came the senior year around, you know, they got the senioritis, kind of slacked a little bit. Then my brother, who is 3 years older than me, went to culinary school. And since we've been cooking our whole lives, I've seen how he kind of cruised to culinary school. I decided I wanted to just enroll in that. But once I was in culinary school, I was like, I loved everything about it, you know.
Yeah.
I love the stress. I love going to working with the chefs in the islands and seeing how food actually like really touched people. You know, prior to that, it was like cooking only for family, but here I was cooking for strangers, and that all of that excited me. I knew that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, where did you cook in after culinary school? Was it always on islands in Hawaii?
No, an internship took me all the way to Walt Disney World.
Oh, yeah. Heard of it. Been there.
And, you know, I met my wife there. I went all the way to Florida to meet a Maui girl, in fact.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. And fell in love, followed her back to Maui. And that is my home. That's been my home for the past 20 years. And I started at a very humble mixed plate shop selling local food, you know, as a dishwasher, as a line cook, and then worked my butt off to become sous chef and then the chef. And then there was other opportunities to open up other restaurants with that company. And while I was doing a restaurant called Star Noodle, had the opportunity to go on a weird little show called Top Chef.
Oh, that weird little show. But what sparked your interest, or you two auditioned? Did someone suggest it to you?
You know, we had an amazing team at this this restaurant called Star Noodle, and we got recognized for our efforts. You know, we won Best New Restaurant for every local publication. We got recognized by the James Beard Award. We got Rising Star Best Restaurants. So we got Food and Wine Best New Chef in that for that year, and got a phone call, and
so they reached out.
Yeah.
And were you hesitant at all, or were you like, oh, you know, I'll give this a try?
I never thought of myself as one of being, you know, like a chef of competing, you know. And I wasn't classically trained. Here I am, a dishwasher turned chef. It was all came from just hard work. I didn't think, well, it was from talent, so to say. I mean, like, I put hard work before my skill of moving up. And, you know, I never cooked in any fancy restaurant. I never even visited any major cities or anything prior to that. So I was a little nervous at first, so to say.
Yeah, and so the first season was Seattle. So that was your first time there. I mean, what was it like competing? And then they brought you back to do the season 14, which I think was some part people had been on the show, and then newcomers too.
Correct. Yes.
And you did very well on both shows.
Yeah. Well, I think the first challenge kind of just got the butterflies out. You know, it was a quick fire challenge where we was first whisked into the restaurant, and I looked at everyone and they told us their resumes, you know, like 3-star Michelin chef or chef in LA with multiple restaurants. And here I am, just this kid in the middle of the ocean. And I was nervous. I was like, okay, how am I, my skills going to be on par with these guys? And ended up being on top on that challenge. And that gave me the confidence to just like continue on. It's like, okay,
I can cut it up
with these guys. And it just all fell into place, challenge after challenge. And made it to the end of both times.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I remember watching and rooting you on, and the fact that you got fan favorite twice, I mean, says a lot. My tip was dedicated to you.
Right on. You know, I try to be myself with always like, you know, two things on my shoulder, my family and Hawaii, and knowing that And I was representing them, and I just wanted to represent well, and always thought about them when I was doing my thing.
Yeah. So after the show, you moved back to Maui and decided to open a restaurant.
Yeah, I moved back to Maui. I did a thing. I left. Before my second time, I took a break. After my first time on Top Chef, I was grinding for a little over 10 years, and I needed a break. Mm-hmm. So I took the whole summer off, spent it with my kids, and it was amazing, you know. And
that's nice.
I met this guy named Shep Gordon. On Maui, kind of an amazing human being, and decided to open up a restaurant called Migrant at that time at the Marriott Wailea, and got to cook for a lot of amazing people. all the celebrities, when they come to Maui, they see Papa Shep, and it was great.
I stayed at the Andaz when I was there, which was so nice.
Yeah, the Andaz is an amazing property.
I seriously was like, I want to open, if I open a second office location somewhere, it's going to be in Maui. Yeah. I mean, that's how much I just fell in love. It was so beautiful. I don't know. I still think about it. Yeah. So
the ongoing joke is when they're like, you know, you should have won Top Chef. It's like, I live in Maui. I kind of win, you know. It's like,
not a joke. It's fact. So then what led you to open Tin Roof?
Yeah, it was this Japanese bento shop that I've been visiting for 10 years, and it fed the community for 25 years. And over those 10 years, I became friends with the family. And, you know, like Chef Dreaming is like, if you ever, they wanted to retire or decided to move on, you know, I would love to have that opportunity. And one day I got the phone call, and a year later, we opened up Tin Roof.
And tell us about the type of food you're doing there.
So Tin Roof is a humble 500 square foot takeout restaurant serving simple local food, basically rice bowls that you get with the island favorites as mochiko fried chicken and chopped steak and garlic shrimp. But it's just fun, approachable food for anybody who comes to the island.
Yeah, I was looking on the map of where it is, and it's more north of where I was, like closer to where the road to
Hana
is, which I did.
Oh.
Which is tedious.
Yeah, did you put the road to Hana tattoo on it? That's pretty much, you earn a stripe if you make it to the Hana road.
I earned a stripe, but I mean, it's... honestly, I still think about, is it worth it just because it's so, you have to go slow and I like to go fast.
Yeah.
I wanted to
common thing with New Yorkers up here.
Yeah, exactly. It had, but then that's good to slow down. But yes, I think it is worth doing. If anyone's listening, it's beautiful. And I remember driving through the town part, which I think that's.
Well, we're actually just like a minute from the airport, so it's
okay.
It's awesome to greet people and then send them off on their way back home. Well, but you know, first and foremost, we're a community restaurant. We wanted to continue that and honor the restaurant that fed the community for 25 years. So we're trying to be that modern mom and pop shop, so to say.
Yeah, well, another excuse to go back.
Let's go.
A restaurant.
We'll
to check
keep putting
out.
That energy in here, Hawaii vibes.
Yes, yes, I love it. So then you opened Lineage, which tell us about that, because I feel it's a little different style
totally.
Or more. Okay.
It was a restaurant that I've been dreaming about. You know, it's like showcasing the food that I had in growing up in Hawaii, but presented in, you know, on a beautiful plate, on using impeccable ingredients, and showcasing the food that maybe haven't been seen in media. I think a stereotype that comes to Hawaii food that it's tropical, right? That it's laced in pineapple and topped with mango, and there's little umbrellas in every single drink, and an orchid that is garnished on the plate. But when you really peel back the layers, you see that the food is based in history of the people who made Hawaii their home. You know, the Hawaiians, the the Filipinos, the Japanese, all those who came to work on the sugarcane field, all brought their culture with them and made this rich, amazing, delicious food that makes up Hawaii.
Yeah. Sounds amazing. And you decided to move on from there to, you were focusing on your cookbook.
Yeah, we're focusing on the cookbook. And, you know, here I am, a chef that is going out to the world and talking about my experience of cooking with my family and enjoying that, being side by side with my dad. And all I was doing was working in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I seen day by day my kids growing older, you know, my daughter missing another cheerleading competition, missing another volleyball game, and that it tore me apart, knowing that they mean the world to me, and that's the priority, and that you know, there'll be many years to come ahead to that I can open another restaurant, but I don't want to miss that time with my kids growing up.
Another reason why I'd say you're a fan favorite, because you have four kids, right?
That I know of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny.
Yes, four beautiful children.
On the record, okay.
Four beautiful children with my wife Janice there, and the years go by quick, let me tell you.
Yeah. So what about the pandemic this past year and a half? I mean, I read a little bit about what was happening in Hawaii, but yeah. I mean, being there, tell us people who were over over on the East Coast, how it was and how it is now.
Yeah, and, you know, this last two years has been very interesting, you know, for the most isolated landmass in the world. And you know, we're smack dab in the middle of the ocean, and what that means is our resources are limited, you know, and we had to take care of that. You know, and it was weird for an economy that is based on tourism, that's what through and through. There's one thing that fuels our economy, and that's tourism. And that all ended for a few months. No one coming to the islands. Mm-hmm. And to go from having, you know, thousands of people in the islands come in and out every day to no one, and our beaches,
yeah,
pristine and empty, and the island, you could feel the island do a big sigh, right? Just this time to rest and us to reflect back. It was tough for the restaurants out there, for sure. A lot of restaurants have closed because of that, but that's across the board. But it was a time to focus on community, and that's what it did. The community, the reason why Tin Roof is still open to this day is because the community. They supported us. We did the same. We fed the kupuna, the elders. We gave food to whoever. That's all we did. It's like, who can we feed? Who needs it the most? And as the tourism started to open back up, we welcome everybody with open arms. But we, like I said, we have finite resources. Like we have to take care of that. So right now it's a balance of prioritizing our community first, the ones who live there, and then how can we still share this paradise with everyone who's coming in.
Yeah. Did you have to alter your menu based on what resources
had? Luckily we had the perfect systems in place, and that was mostly a takeout restaurant. We moved a few countertops and tried to keep everyone safe, but yeah, we were blessed with a systems that was all in place that we actually thrived through the pandemic.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And was tourism then, when it started coming back, was there an issue with that, like too many tourists all of a sudden?
Yeah, then, you know, as everyone and anybody was coming to Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, and this last summer we've seen more visitors than any other time before. And, you know, it was a bittersweet moment knowing that, yeah, we're busy, our economy is back, but we haven't fixed the problem of our resources and how prioritizing the locals who live there. And it was a lot to take in, and it's something that we continues to have a balance. We got to figure that out of showcasing Hawaii, showcasing mm-hmm. this paradise, and sharing it with people, or making sure that the locals are taken care of and can continue to live there.
Yeah, no, it's important. I mean, being in New York City, when you're talking about, I mean, it's interesting because there's a little similarity being like New York is a gets a lot of tourism, and the tourists were gone. I mean, I would go down to Times Square and be like, there would be like one other person in Times Square. It was really weird.
Yeah.
And now they're back. They're back. But yeah, it's I mean, thinking how you're isolated and being it's a destination for tourism and all that definitely
right.
Had to make it very difficult.
Well, we, you know, it puts pressure on our leaders to lead us into this next moment where we can diversify our economy and not have to be dependent on just tourism. Let's look at other things that we can continue to uplift Hawaii.
Right. That's important. What brought you out to New York City on this trip besides to my show with me?
Which yeah, I'm so I mean pizza. For. The pizza's dope.
He came for
yeah,
the yeah, pizza.
I came for pizza. Basic.
Pizza and
that's
podcast.
It. Podcast. No, awesome. And our book came out. That I'd like to think, you know, I had a good time where when people were at home and you know having to cook for themselves. So we've been doing our book tours via. The web.
Uh-huh.
You know, we've been doing live shows and promoting the book, and we've always wanted. There's just something about just meeting people face to face and talking about the book up close and personal. And we knew that New York City has like a place in my heart, and because of its diversity and the richness of its of the city, that we wanted to come out here and share it with everyone.
That's great. You were at the Green Market this morning, I believe.
Yeah.
Doing some book signings.
It blew me away, the stories and the ties of Hawaii right there smack dab in the middle of New York City. Everyone coming up. Yeah.
That's great. So Cook Real Hawaii is the title. What is it meant for people who don't cook a lot or professional chefs or... Anyone.
Yeah, I'd like to think that it's for anyone. You know, a lot of it is history lessons. A lot of it is talking about how this one dish was influenced by the Japanese immigrants that came to Hawaii. A lot of it talks about me as a chef creating restaurants and creating these dishes to appease everyone. And, you know, it just takes you to this journey through my lens of how I see Hawaii, and a lot of it is things that a lot of recipes that is not shared at resorts, so to say. You know, a lot of visitors see a small percentage of what Hawaii is. This is a step into the homes of the people of Hawaii.
Yeah. So what are some of the recipes in the book? Is there famous mochiko chicken in it? Keep hearing about this mochiko chicken.
Yeah, my favorite. You know, that's the actually the recipe that the photo that is on the cover of the book, that mochiko chicken.
So it's in the book.
It's in the book. And you know, we're doing a pop-up here tonight in the East Village with no one, and it's gonna be awesome to be able to share that. But the recipes, one of the biggest rewards, and that's one great thing about social media, is the people sharing and seeing them cooking from the book and nailing it too. Like, these guys are plating up the plates as good as any chef I've ever seen. And it's so rewarding. We really wanted to take people, whether how skilled they are, take them by the hand and take them to the journey and make them feel successful. And a lot of them are just crushing it. And it makes my heart sing. I'm so happy for that.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm going to try to hit your pop-up tonight, too, so I could try
Let's
your chicken.
Let's go.
Yeah, it sounds so delicious.
Change your life.
Life-changing chicken. So let me ask you my question for my last guest. On episode 302, I had on Andrea Strong. She's the executive director of ROAR, which is a community of hospitality leaders advocating for New York City's independent restaurant industry and creating a path to a sustainable future. She is known for her pioneering food blog called The Strong Buzz, which started in 2003, when I started doing PR on my own. So her question is, would you ever consider opening a restaurant in New York City?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's put that energy out there. You know,
I
love New York City from when I visited the first time this is now 7, almost 8 years ago when I was still a young chef before Star Noodle. It was such a moment coming from this simple Hilo town, wearing board shorts and slippers every day, to my eyes being opened up to this world that, you know, you can dream as big as you can. And it's forever been in my heart, and I love it. I love the energy here. Once I get off the plane and the strut starts to, you know, change a little bit.
Walk a little faster, too.
And, you know, it's that kind of opposite end of the rainbows of things that keeps me balanced. So I would love to have my Mochiko chicken up here in New York City one day.
And we would love it, too. And on that note, let's take a little break and we'll come back. We'll play my speedrun game. We'll talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. In Wisconsin, cheese is our thing. Wisconsin is the only state in the country that requires a license to make cheese. From curds to cheddar, blue to brick, Wisconsin cheesemakers can do it all. We blend tradition with innovation to create an incredible variety of cheeses that you just can't get anywhere else. You've heard of a PhD, but have you heard of a PH cheese? Otherwise known as the Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker Program. This rigorous study of cheese is an elite accomplishment earned by only 80 talented cheesemakers in Wisconsin, and the program is only one of two in the world. Becoming a master cheesemaker takes 13 years and is basically like a doctorate in a specific variety of cheese, with intense requirements to succeed. Our Master Cheesemaker program allows makers to perfect both the art and science of their craft in a tradition so rich you can taste it. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Sheldon Simeon. He is the chef and owner of Tin Roof, a new generation mom and pop restaurant in Maui, Hawaii. And we're going to play my speed round game, but quick question before we do. Your Instagram handle is Chef Wonder. Where did that come from? Because it's such a great handle.
Yeah. I was always, it's kind of weird. I love all of my old culinary instructors, but I was the kid that asked 101 questions, you know. I was so intrigued on everything. So I was the kid that would always wondered and like always ask too much questions. So Chef Wonder, that's it.
Chef Wonder, do a lot of people call you that?
I guess now that's
nickname?
Yeah, we just hit 100,000 followers, so it's been rad.
not bad. I love it. Yeah, I would have been mad at myself if I forgot to ask you that. So
yeah, I thought about changing it to Chef Sheldon Simeon, but it stuck. So
we're going with it. It's great. Your next cookbook could be Chef Wonder. Chef Wonder does wonderful things. I don't know. Okay, it's my speed round game now.
All right.
So what this is I name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. So okay. I give you a choice.
Both.
You ready?
Yes.
All of a sudden you look nervous.
Yeah.
Nah, you're good. Okay. Here we go. Eat in, at home, or eat out at a restaurant?
Eat out at a restaurant.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
Al fresco dining.
In Maui. It has to be al fresco. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Oh, or in New York. Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Beer.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tip.
Garlic shrimp or poke?
Poke all the way.
Okay. Top Chef season 10 or 14?
14.
Okay. And sometimes I put one in there that everyone's like, I can't answer that. 14. Okay.
I was in, yep.
All right. I won't dive deeper into that. We'll just leave it like
we'll
that.
We'll leave it like that.
We'll leave it like that. Cheese plate or dessert?
Ooh. Cheese plate.
Last one is Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Maui?
Maui.
Maui. Yeah. It's the first time I've asked that. The added Maui to the mix, and yes, that's
very close. Brooklyn and New York.
Okay. We'll see. Right we'll there. See if the Andrea Strong's dream comes true, and you open a restaurant in New York City, which she was, I think, reason why behind that question. We would love to have you. Okay, so for industry news, big news yesterday came out. For restaurant people follow restaurants. It was all over the news, but there was an article on CNN entitled World's 50 Best Restaurants for 2021 by Maureen O'Hare. And it's exactly that. The World's 50 Best Restaurant Awards were yesterday in Antwerp, Belgium. And they skipped it last year because of the pandemic. So, I was following it on social media. It's good to see all the chefs get back together, worldwide chefs. And the big number one went to NOMA, Copenhagen's yep. NOMA, René Redzepi, which also just earned 3 Michelin stars for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, this list, the names, you know, the top, there's familiar names that have been on the list or move around positions. Mm-hmm. Just so people know, they decided a few years ago that once you're the number one spot, you can't be the number one spot again, because that was happening like over and over again. The same restaurants were number one. So those are on the best of the best list. But NOMA, I think, previously was number one, but years ago, before they moved locations and opened, I guess it's a NOMA 2.0. So very happy for them. I've actually been there once.
And
amazing. It deserves number one.
Yeah. I love seeing following all their different chefs and their fermentation and just continuing to evolve food, you know. And like, one of their biggest thing is like, how are we going to continue to feed ourselves? And they're taking old techniques in order to use it in creative ways, but also thinking about the future of our food.
Yes, absolutely. So what I mean, what's your overall take of the World's 50 Best? Do you I mean, as a chef, as a restaurateur,
I think it's exciting. You know, there was a buzz, you know, like between all my colleagues. It's like, yo, like right when the announcement dropped, you know, like there was like a buzz on Twitter. Or there was a buzz across the world. And I think we need that for our restaurants. We need something to get excited about and uplift. You know, I'll never be in that category or alongside that, but it's amazing to
never say never.
And but I love it to see, you know, like the amount of New York restaurants that's been on there. And and that day we actually ate at Otto Boy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which was,
because Otto Mix was number 43. I think it's the first time they were on the list,
which is amazing. Well deserved.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well deserved.
I dined there once when it a couple of years ago, and it was just it was magical. I mean, they deserve to be on it for sure.
Yeah, and to continue on and to operate at that level, you know, that's a feat. That's to go in and be dedicated at every single moment. That's something that they should be so proud about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from the U.S. I noted San Francisco's Bennu is on the list, Cosme in New York City, and also Single Thread, which is amazing out in Healdsburg, California. And I mean, I don't want to sound obnoxious saying this, but I may. But I travel a lot and I dine a lot. I travel a lot around the world, and I've gone to many of these restaurants. And I've now been. I mean, I'm impressed that I've been to so many of these places. Like, I've sought them out. But of the I've been to 7 of the 10 top 10 solo, and I've been to 9 of the 10. Missing one. Last year, I think last list I was like 10 of the 10, but it's like I've been to a lot of these places, and I feel really, I guess I just feel really lucky that I've been able to experience it, and it is what I prioritize as my life with travel and dining and where I put my money. So I love supporting restaurants.
Yeah.
And I feel very grateful that I've been able to experience so many of these places.
Yeah, that's rad to go and see insight, you know, to see the insight to a, the mind of a chef.
Yeah.
To see what they're thinking and the, all of that energy took to come up with whatever is input in front of you. And yeah, those are amazing experiences for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And something with solo dining, which I enjoy doing when you at tasting menu restaurants, these really top restaurants, I think solo is great because you really you're completely focused just on being there, the experience, the menu. There's no distractions. So that's why I also like to bring it up just to encourage people to dine out. Even like anywhere, like you're welcome. I mean, well, I'd say you're welcome to. Sometimes I find it challenging to make a reservation for one, but these are all. I mean, I'm in awe of the chefs, and I'm glad that they were able to have the awards this year and celebrate them.
Yeah, you know what's great about a lot of these restaurants that I see too is like you thought of like all fine dining restaurants that. Some of them is like never approachable too, but a lot of these places have you can walk into Noma and there's opportunities to go and they have other restaurants that is approachable for more people too. A lot of the times like you would think like a restaurant like to get a reservation is almost impossible or it's like too hotty totty. These guys are like strictly on the food and they want to invite everyone into their restaurant. So it's more accessible to a lot more people to eat the best food in the world.
It really is. It really is. And I mean this, I mean, it's a great list. I mean, and it's chefs are just doing fabulous things. And they also honored, so as there was a, they honored Central's Pia Leone, which as the world's best female chef this year. And they gave a, Dominique Crenn, who's was honored as the Icon Award. So there were other special awards they gave out, and it looked like a lot of fun too.
Yeah, shout out to Andrew Wong, who is the 50 Best Scholarship awardee
from awesome
Hawaii, actually. Oh, but yay. He's out there in Copenhagen right now, but he's traveling around the world. So we got some young guns out of Hawaii too.
That's terrific. And as I said, never say never. You never know. So, yeah, congratulations to everyone. And I'm just, as you know, my traveling has been more limited this past year, but I can't wait to start traveling around the world again and checking out more restaurants because it's like my passion.
You and me both.
Yeah. So, so speaking of which, my solo dining experience this week is here in New York City, and it's at a restaurant called Hawksmoor, New York. So here's the rundown. The location, 109 East 22nd Street at Park Avenue South, New York City. The concept, it's a British chop house. It's offering sustainable seafood and steak, and it has an award-winning cocktail bar. The owners are Hugh Gott and Will Beckett. The executive chef is Matt Bernero, who was formerly at Mineta Tavern, and the restaurant director is Tom Hunt. So why did I go? Well, it's a hot new opening in New York City from this. It's a London-based steakhouse chain. It's very popular in London. And they were supposed to open, I believe, 3 days before the pandemic shutdown here in New York City. So it took them, you know, it's a year and a half later, they just got open. So I was excited to go check it out. My experience. So I had a reservation for one. I showed proof of vaccination and my ID, which is required here. The hosts were lovely. They we chatted a bit about the history of the restaurant or the space of the where the location. Got some trivia on that. And they walked me back to the main dining room, which is really impressive. I'll talk more about that in a minute. I met Neve, the manager. There was a trainee who recognized me, Jameson, who I hadn't seen in many years. So being solo, I was running into people I knew, which was fun. And yeah, I had a really great time. It was a nice selection of non-alcoholic cocktails, which they had a whole book of drinks, which I was excited to see that as a section since I don't drink. And I asked for Tom, who I'd met before, and he came over and we got to chat a little bit. So it was a good time. So what did I get? I went with three starters rather than doing a big steak. I got three charcoal roasted oysters with bone marrow. I got charcoal roasted scallops with white port and garlic. And I got their steak tartare, which was a dry aged rump. Pickled shiitakes were with it. And to drink, I did one of their non-alcoholic drinks. I got the sour cherry America, no, and then parentheses, no alk. So it was like Americano alk, like it's kind of cute. And it was seed lip spice, cherry juice, and soda. And they were calling them temperates. What to drink when you're not drinking? My take, I loved it. I loved everything. I loved my drink. It was a great combination. And it went really well with the oysters. The scallops were divine. And the steak tartare was terrific. You know, steak tartare is one of those things I think it depends. It has to be a really good quality restaurant doing good quality meat where I'll get it. And this was certainly the type of place that was doing all that. So it was quite delicious. The ambiance. So it's a grand dining room with 140 seats, and it has 30-foot vaulted ceilings. It was the assembly hall of the United Charities building, which was built in 1892, and it's now a National Historic Landmark. So the building is really cool. It has a partially open kitchen. It has crown molding and stained glass and mosaic floors and wood paneling. And also they have chalkboards that are around the room that are listing some of the meat cuts. And then there's a huge bar up front. So it's a really nice space. I'd say it's perfect for date night. Interesting tidbit. So Hawksmoor, the first one, opened in London in 2006. And it was quickly evolved as a posh destination for meat lovers. This is their first U.S. location, and it highlights ingredients in the surrounding areas. Personal fun fact. So I had met Tom at the Welcome Conference in New York City a few years ago, so it was really great to see him again. And that night, you know, talk about date night, I saw two people on dates. I saw my friends Brett and Erica and Kathleen and Ronnie. So that's why I said it was perfect for that. Cost of the meal was $70, not including tax gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, their website, HawksmoorNYC.com, and Instagram, HawksmoorNYC. There you go. What you think? You in the mood for steak now?
I'm always in the mood for steak.
Yeah, I think it had really good energy, so I think this place is going to do well. And I'm excited. I think it was a blessing in a sense that they didn't open like a week and then the pandemic came. Mm. They were like a few days out from opening. Not to say it was a good situation, but was a tough year, tough year and a half.
Yeah, timing with restaurants and all that was like that moment where things just like nobody knew what to do. So I'm glad to see restaurants like that thrive and because of a break.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Okay, so it's time for the final question. So my next guest is Brett Chisnitz. I'm hoping that's how you pronounce his last name. We're going to find out next week. He is the owner of Gotham Restaurant, which is the beloved 1984 restaurant reinvented and reopening in fall 2021. It's in Greenwich Village in New York City. I don't know if you're familiar with Gotham. It was Alfred Portelli was the chef for many years, and he left a couple years ago to open his own restaurant, and they're rebranding as Gotham Restaurants, currently not open. So what would you like to ask Brett? It can be anything.
I think with restaurants, as we continue to open restaurants, you know, there's been every single type of restaurant, every single type of concept known to man opening up. And as I continue to open up restaurant, is it more important to preserve the type of restaurant, like an iconic restaurant, or progress and push the envelope So preserve or invent? What is more important?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm excited. I'm interested to see how he answers that. Really cool, thoughtful. Awesome. I will find out. And everyone can tune in next week to hear. I'm so glad we were able to make this happen today, all the way from Hawaii to Brooklyn. I wish you much continued success. I've enjoyed watching your career. And if there's a new season of Top Chef you're on, I'll be rooting you on. You'll get my fan favorite vote. We'll see.
That's an energy that I haven't had before in a while. So we'll see how that energy of putting Top Chef back on out there. Really.
Well, I'm thinking when we're talking, I'm thinking the difference between maybe how you walk in Maui and how you walk in New York City to how you walk when you're on Top Chef's whatever stage. It's probably faster even than Manhattan.
Oh yeah, it is. It's
a scramble.
It's a world of its own.
Yeah. Well, I mean, kudos to you. I can't imagine what it's like to compete on a cooking show on TV. So you've done very well. So wishing you much continued success. I can't wait to try your food and get back out to Maui.
Yes. Aloha, everyone. Thank you so much.
Aloha. So my guest today has been Sheldon Simeon. He's the chef and owner of Tin Roof in Maui, Hawaii. His first cookbook is out now. It's Cook Real Hawaii. You can get it find it wherever books are sold. And his website is tinroofmaui.com, and follow him at Chef Wonder and at Tin Roof Maui. Follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites, bayerpublicrelations.com, sherrybayer.com, and allintheindustry.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Liam. Thanks again to Sheldon. And thanks to Sheldon's publicist, Nicole, my good friend. Appreciate you setting this up. I'm Sherry Bayer. I will be back next week with a new show. I hope you'll tune in then. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.